Good evening. Welcome back to Ulcerative Colitis Motherhood and Me. I'm Ulcerative Colitis Mama and very belated Happy New Year to all my listeners. For those of you who are new, welcome. For those of you who are sort of established listeners, welcome back. This is a safe space. So tonight's episode, I've been doing a lot of thinking the last couple of weeks about sort of content, and I'm very conscious of regurgitating any content that I've already created. But as most, you know, if you're already established listeners, you'll know a lot of the focus of my content is around mental health and mental wellness, and also when things don't go quite well and how I sort of deal with it, or and things like that. So tonight's episode, I'm just sort of looking at sort of generalized mood, things like that, and also sort of tapping into just kind of like sort of deep set sort of feelings and thoughts that may have sort of followed me through into adulthood. So I am aware that this may be content that I've already discussed. So, you know, some of it may sound very similar to other stuff that I've created before. But I just feel like at the moment it's quite relevant to what's going on. And so as always, I like to always put trigger warnings in place. Like I said, a lot of the content that I create does evolve around mental health, mental wellness. So sort of themes that I'll be discussing on this episode will be round about things like, obviously, mental health, anxiety, depressive illness, and just sort of things like sort of childhood trauma and things like that that may have an influence on some people listening. So as always, listener discretion is advised. And without further ado, let's get started with tonight's episode. Oh, so apologies. It's not only blowing a hoolie outside, but my heating's decided to come on. So there's a lot of background noise at the moment. That should settle itself down shortly. Anyway, so yeah, it's taken me a few weeks to kind of look at creating content and sort of delivering any sort of podcast episode, and mainly because not an awful lot goes on during January, I have to say. Plus the fact, you know, it's been sort of like the come down after Christmas, things like that, and it's a particularly challenging month for a lot of people. It's dark, it's, you know, wet, windy in our case. You know, it's quite a, you know, introspective kind of time of the year. And, you know, I've done a lot of thinking, and I know I said I really wouldn't talk about it, but I'm feeling a sense of what they call the new job blues. And I didn't think that was a thing, but then I've done a bit of reading and research while I've, you know, between podcast episodes, which seem to be like every 6 months at the moment. And yeah, apparently it's a thing. It's a whether it's a concept or whether it's like an evidential, you know, thing. Using my fantastic terminology as always. And yeah, it's something that's kind of bothering me a little bit, really. And it's probably more in the sense that I've spent a lot more time on my own, working by myself, which is not a problem. I don't generally mind my own company, but it's a lot of things like second guessing myself and just having a little bit of, you know, drops in my self-confidence, which I really, really struggle with. And that's something I kind of wanted to explore, really, like why. And I get quite angry with myself, which obviously doesn't help with the whole mental wellness thing, you know, sort of taking it out on yourself for feeling the way you do. And it's almost a case of, well, why? Why am I not confident? Why do I second guess myself? Why do I cower at authority? Why do I sort of do, I think they call it the fawning reflex, where I just kind of just lie down and just accept being, you know, criticized, or why I find criticism particularly hurtful. Not, maybe not even hurtful, but I take it to heart. Always been a sensitive kid. And I wonder, is it nurture or nature, and whether it's, you know, is it experiences from childhood that have sort of come through into my adulthood, or is it just a culmination of everything? And particularly looking back and sort of I do a lot of thinking on the drive home from work, because it's probably the only time I get a chance to kind of like decompress, really. And particularly if work's been busy, and things, it's, you know, and it always was in my old job. I spent a lot of time in the car by myself, so that gave a lot of internal monologues, sometimes even external monologues. And, you know, and I do a bit of thinking, I think, well, why am I like this? Why am I the person I am? Now, there is, you know, evidence to suggest that it could be, you know, a natural phenomenon, whether it's, you know, I just, you know, it's the way my brain's wired. You know, it could be genetics. It could be a number of things, but it could, it's probably the latter being nurture is probably the most profound. You know, we form most of our attachments, our, you know, and our kind of personality traits and things from our parents, from our, you know, caregivers, from the humans that we spend the most time with. And certainly as young children, toddlers, babies and things, we form our memories and attachments through that. This is quite a deep episode, isn't it? I didn't think I was going to get all sciencey on you. Plus, I've been reading a lot of psychological thrillers, and I start reading it thinking, oh, God, this sounds like me. Hopefully not. But yeah, a lot of it is probably around nurture. And like I said, about the fawning reflex, I think they call it. And it was a guy, basically, I just sort of stumbled across on social media one day. And he said, like, the fawning reflex is basically, as he described it, was when you are in a position where there's somebody of authority or somebody sort of telling you off or whatever, you kind of, as a fawn, as a baby deer, you kind of lie down and just accept that person treating you that way. And yeah, I can kind of agree to that in some respects, because that's kind of how I react. Maybe not to that extent of fawning and falling over, but certainly I don't respond well to criticism, whether it's constructive or not. Obviously, for the not many of us do accept being criticized. But, you know, I work in an environment where constructive criticism is how we learn. It's as in most, you know, working environments, specifically working in healthcare, because you are trained to be what's called a reflective practitioner. So you reflect on your behaviors, your values, your the way you compose yourself, your professionalism, your ability to sort of, you know, help build a relationship of trust with your patients and your service users. So you were trained to reflect on, and probably, and it's probably a cultural thing being in the UK, because we're incredibly humble and we don't like to, you know, we, as a rule, we don't try kind of pat ourselves on the back very often. But as a reflection, we kind of, more often than not, we kind of draw upon experiences that haven't gone well, and we learn how, if we're in that position again or in a similar position, how we learn from that and how we behave differently and how we act differently and how we would deal with that situation again in a different light. Or, you know, it's basically a learning curve. How would we learn from that? And a prime example is, you know, at the moment, you know, I'm starting to spend more time on my own in my job. So I've gone from a team of, you know, 8-10 nurses to a team of 3, and we're only operational as a pair on a good day. And with holidays and sickness and things, there are going to be times where I'm going to have to be on my own. I'm the only full-time member of staff, so I'm the only one that's working the 5-day week, whereas one of my colleagues is working 2 days and my other colleague is working 3 as a job share. So the now sort of we're coming to the end of the tax year where our sort of annual leave, so our holidays, our yearly holidays are having to be, you know, used up quickly in sort of anticipation for the new tax year. Because if you don't use them, you lose them. So one of my, obviously my colleagues have consolidated a little bit of holiday. So they, you know, they're going to have to take days off when I'm working. So I've already had, you know, a couple of shifts by myself. You know, my first one went reasonably well because I knew there was my other colleague was going to be in the following day. So I didn't feel like I was completely, you know, sort of treading water by myself. And then last week I had 2 days on my own. So I had Thursday and Friday on my own, which can go either way. It's kind of a feast or famine kind of role, the role that I do now as a specialist. So an example of this was last week I went to my consultant, so one of my senior doctors that kind of is attached to the service I work for, just for some advice regarding a patient. And it wasn't an urgent case. It was fine. It could wait. It was just, I felt like, you know, kind of strike while the iron's hot kind of thing. I'm quite proactive and I like to not leave things to last minute. While I was sorting this out, you know, I was on my own and the kind of referrals I was getting through to the service were quite complex. And I felt that I wasn't in a position to kind of deal with them as straightforwardly as, you know, the usual kind of referrals I get, because the patients were, you know, they had complex acute illnesses and things that I wasn't really sure of. So we're quite lucky we have a group chat. Now, the group chat consists of myself and my two nursing colleagues, and then there's two doctors as well, and one being this consultant. And she's great. Don't get me wrong. She is absolutely fantastic. She's the most human doctor I've ever met. And that's no disrespect to doctors, but she's of that slightly older. She's not older. She's older than me, but probably only about 10 years or so. But she's not the new kind of wave of very, very humanistic doctors that are kind of coming in through the health service now. She's kind of in the middle ground, really. So she could potentially be still in that egotistical area, but she's not. She's very, very, very human and very approachable and has a wonderful manner with the patients. And this particular case, it was very complex. It was quite an acute patient, and I didn't feel like my expertise were kind of needed because I felt like there was other stuff kind of a bit more high priority than what I could offer her. So I just sort of, you know, put on the group chat any suggestions I've got, you know, this situation here with this patient with this background and this is what's going on and what can I do, because I can't do A, B and C, you know, is there a D kind of thing. And yeah, that was fine, and you know, I sort of sorted it, and then I went to go and meet this consultant to discuss the first patient that I wanted to discuss with her. And she sort of said to me, you know, and bear in mind, I do have an area here where I could have perhaps reflected, in fact, I could have perhaps, you know, I definitely could have done this better. Now, I'd, you know, spoken to all the relevant people, spoken to people that are a little bit more qualified than me, one being a colleague of mine who's a nurse practitioner, who's a very, very highly skilled nurse practitioner, and got his advice, got the advice of a pharmacist. So I kind of had expert opinions for the decision I made. And I felt that I was quite restricted on what I could do. So I just thought, right, let's just do this. Keep it safe, keep it simple. That's kind of our team's motto. So anyway, I went up to see my consultant colleague to discuss patient one. But then she sort of said about patient two. And she sort of said, oh, can you describe the situation? Now, truth be told, I didn't actually go and physically interview the patient. So I just kind of looked at history and went, oh, crikey, she's got a lot going on. Right, this is what I can sort of suggest from my kind of perspective. Liaised with two senior colleagues, as I said before, and they said, yeah, that's fine, go ahead. And that was it. Because I didn't feel like I needed to stick my oar in at that point, because she was, you know, this patient was quite poorly. She then sort of quizzed me about it a little bit, and she didn't agree with my plan, which is fine. And that's absolutely fine, because she kind of, you know, she's a consultant, she's a doctor, she's a specialist in the field that I specialize in. And of course, she's been doing this job a lot longer, whereas I've been doing the job 3 months and I'm still finding my feet. So in that sort of period, I felt she didn't chastise me. I think that's a really strong word, but I picked up a sense of, yeah, I could have done better. And I probably, yeah, and I most likely could if I'd gone and spoken to the patient directly, you know, with patient two. But I think I still would have stuck to my guns and kept the same plan, which I'd implemented. I don't think it would have made any difference. But I took it on the chin and accepted the, I wouldn't even say criticism, but it was a more of a sort of very direct question. And I said, no, that's fine. I accept that. I probably should have done that. I probably should have gone and seen her and blah, blah, blah. And it kind of stuck with me all day. And it stuck with me even now. And this was before the weekend. And it's not so much of what happened, because that's completely justified. And it's reflection. So I'll learn from that, because I won't do that the same way again. I will do something different next time. If I'm ever in a similar situation. And she was fine. You know, she didn't shout at me. She's very direct, but not in a, you know, not in a mean way. She's just direct, because that's just how she is. She just doesn't beat around the bush, as we say. You know, so I took it on board, and it's a learning experience. But I still felt quite hurt. And that's kind of what I want to kind of explore, really. And it's not what she said. It's not that she implied anything. It's not that she patronized me or made me feel bad. It was me making me feel bad, because it's the way I have interpreted it, I guess. And that's what I'm quite curious about, because this is a theme that's followed me through my entire adult life. And I don't know whether it's, again, this nature versus nurture sort of situation. And I'm always very conscious of how people perceive me. And I know at almost 37 years old, as a wife and mother, homeowner, you know, specialist nurse, that I should be at that stage of my life where people's opinions don't really matter. You know, and people's opinions of me are not my business. As long as I get my head down and do what I've got to do, and do things safely, kindly, and with respect. But still, things like this really, really kind of consume me, I would say. And it's quite interesting. And I've sort of been looking at a lot of sort of vlogs and blogs the last sort of few weeks, really, about certainly around sort of psychology and things. And I think it is, I don't like letting people down. And for that, I guess, in my mind, that for that sort of second that when I said, oh, actually, I didn't do that, in my mind, whether it's, you know, it's not objective here, this is completely, you know, this is sort of psychoanalyzing myself here, that I took that as a criticism. And I took it, although constructive, if that's what it was, I felt hurt by that, because I felt that I'd let that consultant down, because I misrepresented the service through a misdemeanor. It wasn't even a misdemeanor, because there was no harm, there was nothing bad, nothing bad happened, but I could have done something better. And it was a learning, you know, and even as I talk about it now, it doesn't actually seem that big a deal. And it isn't. It's not a deal at all. But it was almost like that, oh, I've been told off by the teacher kind of situation. I've done something wrong. She's going to think differently of me now. And it's textbook, fortune telling, mind reading, whatever you want to call it, whatever, the catastrophizing, it's all of those. And it's quite interesting, particularly now that, you know, I'm an adult. I'm a very fully fledged adult. You know, if you ask my mum, apparently, according to my mother, I'm middle-aged, which I was very kind of offended by. So why am I still being bothered by things like this? Why? And things like being very conscious of time as well. So bearing in mind, where I work is a district hospital. So it's a relatively large hospital. You know, it's probably got about 800 beds, which is kind of your standard district sized hospital, general hospital. And my job covers all 800 beds, regardless of speciality, regardless of the age of the patient. If they're an inpatient, they're my problem. That sounds awful. No patient is a problem. If they're an inpatient, they can be referred to the service I work for. So you think, you know, on a good day, there's two of us. On a not so good day, there's only one. So I had to kind of give myself a bit of a break. There was one of me plus, you know, 20 odd wards, you know, plus theatres, plus maternity services, plus paediatrics. So that's a lot of area to cover when there's two people. So when there's one person, it's even more of a strain. And, you know, and I felt like, right, okay, I'm working from, you know, 8:30 till 4:30. I just need to, you know, be quite proactive, quite responsive. And, you know, and I was, and there was some this kind of lulls and things at the day. No 2 days are the same in this role, as I've discovered. It is literally feast or famine. And that could even be in a course of one day. It could be sort of famine in the morning and feast in the afternoon and vice versa. So I'm always conscious, and I carry a pager or a bleep. So I'm constantly waiting for that to go off in anticipation. And it's like, right, okay, which side of the hospital is that going to be? I mean, it's great for exercise. I got, you know, about 8,000 steps done in a day. And I did, on those 2 days, I got a really good step count in. And it was almost like, right, okay, I've got to go. I've got to go and see this patient, or I'm not going to have time to see the next patient. And it's like, you know, and I know I need to chill. And that's, you know, I know that. And everybody I've ever worked with, and, you know, even Big G sort of says I need to chill. Because I don't. Because it's almost like that. I don't want to let people down. I don't want to run out of time. I don't want, you know, I don't want a patient to, you know, potentially miss out because I haven't got time to see them. And Friday in particular, it was a case of, I should probably eat my lunch quite quickly because I might get bleeped again. And it was really sick. Rather than when I'm with a colleague, it's like, no, you have your lunch. We will respond to the, you know, we'll take the call and we'll put them on the list and we will go and see the patient when we're ready. You know, it's not, you know, we're not a 999 service, you know, we're not sort of going there with blue lights and, you know, Heelys or, you know, roller skates, whatever. We are actually, you know, we will respond within a reasonable time, but, you know, the wards know that there's only two of us on a good day. You know, and you can't get everywhere. You know, you're human at the end of the day. We're not superhuman. And it is, it's that the amount of pressure I put on myself is ridiculous. When I thought, when I come into this role, I'm going to calm down a bit because I'm going to be in a more senior role and, you know, I'm going to have a better locus of control. But I'm still obviously not quite there yet, it seems. So again, we're looking at the nature versus nurture thing. And I wonder, is it because of things that happened as a child that have made me more aware? Certainly of, you know, if, when it comes to the crux of it, I'm scared of being in trouble. That is the crux of it. And that was me on the drive home tonight having some sort of philosophical moment. I'm scared of getting into trouble. And why? Why is it? And I could safely say, harking back to sort of early-ish childhood, sort of, you know, kind of from the age of 7, 8 onwards, that was probably when my dad got diagnosed with his mental illness. And that's when things started getting a little bit hostile at home, when things started getting a bit uncomfortable, and I started being able to be very aware of changes in atmosphere within my own home. And again, this is not about appointing blame. And I do discuss about my dad's mental health history a lot in my podcast episodes. And this is not as a detriment to him. This is no disrespect to him. We have a very, very good relationship, my dad and I. We're exceptionally close, probably because of this. And, you know, now I'm an adult and I can understand the complexities in some respects of mental illness, having, you know, been there myself. I know it was not him. It was his illness that was talking to me then, not him. So when I say about sort of being in fear of being in trouble, I've done a lot of reading around sort of empathic behavior. So, if you know, I think I even actually posted content regarding this on both my blog and my podcast as well. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Like, oh, I'm an empath. I feel, you know, like I feel people's feelings, blah, blah, blah. You know, and, you know, some of it is kind of a little bit kind of far-fetched. However, I feel that there is some truth in that. And whether it's, you know, some people think of it as a spiritual thing, that some people very much, you know, and that's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, maybe there is. No, none of us really know, do we? But there's also some kind of psychosocial elements to that too. And I've referred back to this before in previous podcast episodes, where I was sort of scrolling through social media, as we do, and where this lady said, and I know I've quoted this before, those of you who are empaths, who gave you permission to basically monitor other people's feelings? And that really knocked me for six, because that really resonated with me on many, many accounts, because growing up with a mentally ill parent who was pretty volatile at his worst, that the atmosphere was very palpable on his bad days, where you would kind of not want to make a noise and you would kind of want to stay out of the way. And that was basically what my mum used to say, you know, just stay out of his way, you know, and, you know, just don't do anything, you know, don't complain, and you know, my mum feels awful for it now, because she said she felt that she tried to shield me and my brother from it, and you know, and she probably did to a certain extent, but unfortunately there's no soundproofing in houses. You can hear things, you can feel, I looking back now, I can feel the tension in the atmosphere. It was oppressive, it was heavy, it was treading on eggshells 24/7, scared to have, you know, your videos on too loudly, or, you know, scared to have friends round because of the noise. You're scared to, you know, not do any of your chores because it will make him angry. And it was, and I very firmly believe that that's where it all began. Although previously to that, I did have elements where I was scared of sort of authoritative figures like teachers and things. I've never liked being shouted at. I've never liked confrontation. I am a little bit more chopsy now than I ever used to be, but I think that's from becoming a parent myself and becoming somebody in a protective role. And this sort of disappointing people or letting people down or getting in the way or becoming a burden to people is very much the ethos for kind of, you know, staying small, staying quiet and keeping out of the way was very much what I had from the age of, you know, from about the age of eight, because that's kind of when I firmly remember it, right up until I left home in my 20s. And it's sad. And it's, again, it's not about appointing blame, but this is where, you know, childhood experiences kind of have an effect. It wasn't my dad's fault. It wasn't my mum's fault. It was nobody's fault. It was just, I was just a victim of circumstance, as they say. And it has. It's made me very reflective. It's made me very, very self-aware of how I come across if I'm being an inconvenience to people. I think, I've really, really struggled with worrying about what people think of me. And that's come from even, way into adulthood, where being a student nurse, and that's kind of one of your main worries, is worrying what your teachers, your mentors think of you, because they have the power to decide whether you become a nurse or not. They have such an influential role on you, on your future, that you do kind of make yourself a bit small and behave yourself and be good because you want them to pass you. And it's quite a responsibility to have. And then when I went on to do my mentoring training, when I did my mentorship course as a qualified nurse, sort of 4, 5, 6 years into qualifying, I made damn sure that I'd never make a student feel that they had to squash themselves down, make themselves smaller. I'm very much in the realms of wanting them to act professionally and not being sort of loud, shouty, sweary individuals in a ward area in front of sick people. But I didn't want them to lose themselves either, and that was very much like a kind of a goal that I set myself, never to make a student feel bad, because I knew how it felt. So things like being conscious of time constraints, about being a nuisance, about sort of keeping yourself small. But I'm in a position now where I shouldn't make myself small, because I'm in a specialist nurse role and I need to make myself known, to the wards and things, because they're still getting to know me. So, it's about going in and, kind of putting on that, almost like that putting on that role. I've got the uniform on and I'm in that role now, so I have to behave in that role, not to the, to the detriment of becoming like some sort of, pantomime villain, but, going in and being, supportive, but not mincing my words, not being mean, but being, constructive in in a nice, kind way, not going to go, oh, why haven't you done this? Because I know how busy it is to work on a ward, and it's got a lot harder. And since COVID, it's got so much harder. I see it daily now, and I'm just glad I don't work on the wards anymore, that I've got the ability to get out of that situation, hats off to any ward nurse, any nurses. I'm in quite a privileged position now as a specialist, so I'm from the outside looking in for a change. So it has been, it's kind of, and as I was saying about the new job blues as well, I think that's the most sort of stressful, I don't think it's the right word, but it's the most sort of, makes me more anxious when I know I'm going to be on my own. But I know what I'm doing. And if I don't know what I'm doing, I can text on the group chat. So there are ways in me. I'm not left hanging. I've always got support. And I know I'm going to be fine. And we all survive our worst days, don't we? And I'm not in a position where my role is going to have any detrimental effect on anyone. So the pressure's off. Much, much more pressure off than in my old role, where people were very, very vulnerable because they were at home and they probably needed to go to hospital. Or, there wasn't a 24-hour cover, whereas the patients I see are being looked after for 24 hours a day. It's very different. And, and to be fair, my two colleagues who have been doing this job a lot longer than me, who have been nurses a lot longer than me since before I was born, are incredibly calm and supportive, and they just reassure me every so often. But I don't want it to be one of those people that needs to be reassured all the time, because I think that's kind of what I was like in my other jobs, and it got on people's nerves. Again, I'm just trying to mind read again, and that's probably not the case. Or, and if it was, it's none of my business, is it? So, So the new job blues, I think, has hit me more since I've spent more time on my own, because it's not just about the responsibility of being on my own and doing my job and sort of, you know, providing a service to the wards day to day. It's also, I'm lonely. It's quite a lonely job. You know, I'm working with, you know, I've gone, like I said, I've gone from a team of sort of 8 or 9, maybe even 10 nurses, and, you know, a massive team of other sort of disciplines, you know, up to sort of spending time with people milling in and out about up to 20, 30 people a day, to just me and a colleague. And it's different because my former colleagues were my age. We all had sort of similar backgrounds. Most of us had young children, so we had a lot of things in common. There was, you know, there was, as much as I hate the word, there was banter. Oh, sorry about that. Me and my fantastic editorial skills. Little G ran up the stairs, and then the current storm Jocelyn that is blowing a hoolie outside has decided to steal my fake plant off my front doorstep. I've managed to rescue the planter, but the fake plant has disappeared. So my neighbours have probably gained a nice fake, you know, bay tree shaped bush somewhere on my street. So lucky them. So I've got to laugh about it. It's I know it sounds really, really silly compared to most of you guys out there, you know, especially you guys across over in the States and Canada and places like that, where you've had an incredibly awful cold snap and awful, awful weather. And there's us, you know, kind of complaining about 55 to 60 mile an hour wind that has run off with one of my fake plants. You know, it's just, you know, the mind boggles, doesn't it? And it is relatively... But, you know, adverse weather normally makes me really, really anxious, especially sort of heavy winds and things like that, and certainly snow and ice. And you might be able to hear it on the background, you know, of this podcast episode. So it is quite blowing quite, you know, forcefully. But, you know, this is what we call a yellow weather warning, which is like, you know, potential risk to life. Amber is bit more of a risk to life, stay indoors, and then red being, you know, just stay indoors. So you could probably hear it in the background. So it's like blowing at my house. So yeah, that, you know, I'm not a fan. This is the 10th storm we've had in 5 months. This is absolutely ridiculous now. But yeah, total side quest there. Now I've lost my fake bush. So it'll turn up, and if it doesn't turn up, I'll just have to buy another one. It's fine. It's very kind of it's not a big deal, but yeah. So this is what happens when you podcast when your child is at home with you and you've got a storm going on in the background. But yeah, so as I was saying, yeah, I'm not a fan of the word banter because I think it's overused, and it's actually like a demonized word these days now, because it's kind of like a, yeah, especially over in the UK, banter is not a good kind of term. But in regards to working in a larger team with people, like-minded people of similar age, of similar backgrounds that also have children, you know, it was very much a safe space. And because I'd been there for so long, I'd been there sort of 6 years, you know, I'd formed very, very close bonds with those people. And, you know, I was able to be vulnerable when I needed to without fear of judgment. Although I do tend to kind of fear judgment, but I felt safe with those people. And I'm not there now. I'm with this smaller group of people who are my parents' age, you know, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. I mean that, you know, that's great because they've got a whole lifetime of wealth, knowledge and skills that they can, you know, impart on me. And I will learn absolutely, you know, if I know half their stuff, you know, I'll be on to a winner, you know. They're incredibly clever people and, you know, inspirational, but you can't really have the same kind of sweary, jokey, dark, twisty humour type with these guys. Although, you know, one of my colleagues is pretty sarcastic, so it's fine. But it is a massive kind of shift. And things like, you know, I'm not spending every day with them. And I know that my job, my old job's been filled, and the new girl, you know, I can't form a judgment on new girl because I don't know her, and I don't, and that would be unfair, and it'd be likewise for her to feel that of me. But there is an element of jealousy there, a little bit of, you know, kind of envy, and that's, you know, possibly because, you know, I'm not there anymore, and I'm not sort of experiencing that daily daily sort of, you know, daft humor and practical jokes and stuff, you know, not, you know, just stuff that kept the mood going, you know, kept sort of morale high and things, and that kind of that collective that we had, and it's not there now. So you know, and I knew that was going to be a big part of me going into this new job, that, you know, it was going to open so many doors for me, but unfortunately it was going to mean that I was going to leave people behind. Not necessarily, you know, I got the opportunity to see them outside of work, you know, I've got their numbers and, you know, I'm still in contact with them. But, you know, I'm just not part of it anymore. And that's something I'm really, really struggling with. And that's like the biggest, that's been the hardest transition for me. And especially things like they're organizing sort of social, you know, catch ups and stuff and nights out and things, which, you know, which is great. It's absolutely fine. But there's a lot of things that, you know, they want to do that's not really my kind of scene, and sort of trying to sort of let people down gently and stuff. And then, you know, things like now the plans are kind of changed and a little bit more close to home, but I just still feel like I don't really want to go. So I've kind of taken a step back at the moment. And I think it's because I really struggled at the Christmas party, in the sense that I sort of sat there, looked around, and all the faces were the same and everybody was the same, but it was different, if that makes sense. It was just like I was not in there anymore. I was not part of it anymore. I was not part of the family anymore. And that's not necessarily me being, you know, and that's probably a little bit of an exaggeration on it, but I do feel very, I'm not there now. And it's just a case of what I do with that. And, you know, obviously I do want to stay in touch with people. I formed some very, very close friendships with these people, but, and, you know, that's not something you can just sort of, you know, let go. But it's also hard, and, you know, and now this another person that started now that's filled my job role, that's taken my place, that it's, you know, is there really a place for me anymore? So, and I know it sounds really, you know, and it probably does sound a little bit dramatic, and but it's almost like I don't want to. Not that I don't want to see them. Of course, I'd love these guys to bits, but there's almost like a reluctance to, because life moves on, things move. It's a constant, you know, constantly moving forward, which means that people aren't going to stay static when you've gone. Things are going to move on. New friendships are going to be formed. New relationships are going to be formed, and whether I'm in that or not is, it's irrelevant, isn't it? So, you know, it is. It's just about kind of giving myself a little bit of space to heal, as well as to kind of accept that I'm not part of it anymore. And I, you know, and I do have massive fear of missing out on things. And there's a little element of envy there as well, and insecurity, I guess. But you know, and there's been times like sort of the back end of last week where I've been on my own and I felt like I floundered a little bit, and I've been a bit like, oh, I don't know if I've done the right thing, and I've kind of overthought things, and then I've been worrying about sort of letting people down again. See, it's just like a constant theme. And like, you know, being able to say no as well, you know, and just you know, because it wasn't something I didn't want to particularly go on that particular night out, because it meant sort of traveling and more expense and figuring out how to get home and stuff. And I don't like having to go out and you know, go out anywhere and worry about how to get home. I always need to know I've got an escape route, that I, you know, that I feel safe, because I've always sort of maintained that, really, knowing that I can get home, that I can get back to safety, and not feel sort of like, not be left on my own and sort of in a strange place. And it's just not my scene. It's just not something I want to do. I'm very much more in the, I'm happy to go to the pub, or happy to go for a meal, or, you know, and I don't mind the occasional going out sort of during the day and things like that, and getting the last bus home. You know, it's, I'm still very much there, but it's just, I'm not one for big, loud, shouty nights out these days. I just like my own peace. You know, it's just, yeah, I'm getting boring in my old age. But, you know, especially this time of year, I'm really unmotivated to go out. I don't like the weather. I don't like the dark. I don't, you know, I'm very much a summer person. So, yeah. So that's kind of had a bit of an impact as well. And then it's always been a case of, have I made the right choice in going for this job? Did I make the right choice having this massive leap of faith into such a senior specialized role? And yes, deep down, I know I've made the right decision. Deep, not even deep down, I know logically, rationally, I have. But my emotional, irrational brain is sort of saying, oh, well, you wouldn't have this if you still worked in your old team. It wouldn't have been an issue. It would be a non-issue. It wouldn't, you know, I'd still be with them, have the same banter, do the tea rounds, do, you know, go and see my patients in the community and things, and nothing would have changed. But I know I wasn't happy there. Not because of the people. They were the only things that were keeping me there. And I loved my patients as well, but it just wasn't the job. It was dead man's shoes. So for me anyway, I'm not saying that, you know, it was for me, because I felt that I needed to exercise, use these extra skills and courses, and I wanted to challenge myself a little bit more. And oh, by God, I have. So it is, it's just still adjusting. And, you know, I remember somebody saying to me, you know, you've got to give it at least 6 months to settle in, and nothing's permanent. You know, nothing's stopping you from moving on. And at the start, no, I'm happy in this job. I do. When I sit there and think about, oh, why don't you apply for another job then if you're not that happy? And I think, no, because I don't want to. I don't want to apply for it. It's a good job. It's a very good, rewarding job. It's a little bit sad at times, but it's a very ultimately rewarding job. It's quite, you know, pressure off. Although apart from the pressure I put myself, you know, it's a good job. I've got so much to learn. There's so many opportunities I can take from this. Plus, I don't have to work weekends or bank holidays. I have so much more presence at home. I feel like quite a normal person with a normal job, and it's a job I can leave in work and pick up when I get back there tomorrow. It's not a job that's going to consume my personal life like other jobs have in the past. So I know I've made the ultimate reasonable, logical career move, but it's still quite hard. So in conclusion to that, I think the combination of having sort of that fear of being in trouble, plus, you know, almost second guessing myself, feeling probably a little bit vulnerable in that role by myself, you know, sort of like mixed with new job blues, mixed with, you know, missing my old team and my friends and, you know, my old work family and no longer sort of feeling part of it anymore. And, you know, and overthinking constantly and having really vivid dreams that linger after you wake up and just sort of make you feel really reflective about stuff. And, you know, you know, so sleep's been a bit of an issue as well. So I'm not feeling fully rested when I get up in the morning. And it's dark, it's winter, it's horrible. It's, you know, you're coming to work, it's dark, you're leaving home at sunset, and there's just no daylight hours, you know. You know, and I just feel, you know, a combination of all that is quite easily going to have some sort of effect on my current state of mind. And, you know, and take this for, if this is not a classic example of an anxiety dream, I don't know what is. So I dreamt the other night, and it's still really, really vivid, that I think I woke up when Big G got up, because he gets up a couple of hours before me, because he works longer hours. And and sometimes it kind of rouses me a little bit. I'm aware that he's awake. Anyway, I must have fallen back to sleep. And in that period of time, I dreamt that I'd woken up late, because this is like, I don't like being late. This is one of my like phobias, if it's a phobia. And I remember getting up, and for some reason I had shoes and socks on while I was in bed. No idea. And as I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to be late for work. Oh, I've got to get, you know, little G ready. I've got to sort the dog out, blah, blah, blah. I'm taking these shoes and socks off, and more shoes and socks appear underneath. So every time I'm taking like a pair of socks off for a pair of shoes, there's another pair underneath. And this just became like a cycle. And it's, yeah, so I don't know. Like I said, if that's not an anxiety dream, I don't know what is. So it is. It's almost like that kind of worry. I'm a worrier, and I know I'm a worrier. And I know 99% of the time that I worry is I'm worrying for no reason, because I'm overthinking it. I'm overanalyzing a situation, and I'm catastrophizing it, a situation that may never happen. And I know that's a very difficult mindset to get out of. And I know, and I'm aware of it, and I know that I need to get out of it, and I know that I need to not think that way and change my mindset. But it's very difficult to retrain your brain that's always been worried. So there's quite a lot going on in that, in the background, in the sense that, you know, I'm functioning, I'm doing my job well to the best of my ability, you know, and as long as I can sort of say at the end of the working day that I've done everything in my power to do my job safely, correctly, and, you know, for the greater good, you know, it's, that's all I can do. And it's the same with anything, isn't it? And, you know, I hope one day that I can stop being such a worrier and stop overthinking and overanalyzing and stop panicking every time there's a weather warning. one day maybe, but, you know, that day is yet to arrive. So that's where I'm at with the moment. And I know a lot of it does sound like a complete carbon copy of other things that I've posted in the past. But like I said, out of the, you know, the main sort of things that I look at, the main themes that I look at in my podcast and across my social media platforms is mental health, because I think it's such, you know, it affects everybody, absolutely everybody. And, you know, we're all human, and we've all got these incredible pressures put on us. We're all being kind of scaremongered by the news. We're all being scaremongered by the weather warnings, and, you know, we felt like this constant pressure to maybe to achieve beyond what we need to. And you know, it's a big change. And I know I repeat myself on and on and on. And I said I probably wouldn't go and talk about my new job, but I did anyway. But it's been a massive, you know, change for me. You know, when you think about it, you know, I've been a nurse for just over 13 years. So essentially, I've spent half my career in one place. So that's quite that speaks volumes in terms of how settled and how safe I felt there. And, you know, and I feel safe in my new role to, you know, I do, to be fair. I'm not in as, you know, I'm not a lone worker in that regard now. But, you know, I'm having to, you know, it's just, I'm just pushing myself a little bit more, than, you know, now. But I just need to know not to push myself too far, because I know I kind of resist that. So I've just got to just take care of myself. And I know that. And I think we all need to take care of ourselves, don't we? And it is, it's just, that's what's kind of been bothering me, I guess, at the moment. And I'm hoping things will improve and I can look back at this in 6-12 months time and think, oh God, was I really that bad? Was I really that worried? You know, it's, but I guess worry comes from a good place because I want to do things right and I want to do things safely and I want to look after people. And that's, I suppose, if I was coming into a role that I wasn't worried and apprehensive and overthinking, that maybe nursing wasn't the right career for me. So, you know, give myself a little bit of credit. And we're all shaped by nature and nurture as well. And, you know, in terms of things like criticism and worrying about getting into trouble, like, for instance, walking past my manager, my boss, today, 10, 15 minutes before officially the end of my shift. You know, again, the fear of authority. Now I'm scared she's going to email me in the morning and say, why did you leave work early? She's not that kind of manager. She's very, very much a compassionate manager, which is great. And she probably knows that we leave 10, 15 minutes early some days because if there's no work to be done, and we've done, you know, obviously we followed all the rules and things. It's just we've happened to finish a little bit, you know, earlier today because there was nothing, you know, we'd done everything. But still there is that fear that I'm going to be, well, why did you leave work early yesterday? And it's that fear of authority, not fear of authority, but that fear of being in trouble. Because I've always been a people pleaser because I've always wanted to monitor how the situation, monitor how people are feeling, monitor people's emotions and feel people's emotions. And that's where, you know, whether again you're a spiritual person or not a spiritual person, but that empathetic kind of role comes on because you then try and take on, you know, you know, it's that worrying about what they're going to do, what they're going to say to you. And there's probably is quite a significant chance she's not going to say anything at all. I will let you know if that's any different, if I do get my knuckles wrapped tomorrow. But I don't take the mick. I don't take advantage of, you know, some days I'm going to finish late, some days I'm not. So it's just kind of rolling with the punches, isn't it? And, you know, not taking liberties, as we say. But it is kind of looking at that nature versus nurture and understanding and respecting it in some respects and give myself a break because it's not my fault. It's not my fault I feel like that. It's not my fault I'm a people pleaser. It's nobody's fault. It's just how, what I was exposed to at a young age. And it was living with a volatile parent, to keep the peace, to stop him having outbursts, to stop him being angry. It was just a case of being quiet, make yourself small, keep out of the way. And, you know, don't do anything to annoy him, wind him up, you know, which is very difficult to with somebody who's got mental illness because you don't know why they're angry and you don't know why they're... And I didn't... And, you know, it was only until my 20s that I realised that, you know, I was probably a bit younger than that, till early adulthood, that depression was a mental illness, that it wasn't just a state of mind. It was a mental illness, a recognized mental illness, the same as a physical disease. And it wasn't that he had a horrible personality or that he was a bad man. It was, he was hurting. He had been through trauma. And I understand that now. And I don't hold him against it, you know, I don't hold it against him at all, or to my mum, for her trying to protect her family unit. I don't appoint blame on anybody. It's just, unfortunately, your experiences do have some impact and some influence on how you develop as an adult. So it's that fear of upsetting somebody else and being aware of other people's emotions and being aware of palpable mood changes, atmosphere changes within your own home. And that lady that was podcasting, that one that was talking about empaths and who gave you permission to be the mood controller, if you like, to regulate other people's moods, which is nobody's responsibility. She also said, I bet you can tell somebody's mood from the way they move, the way they breathe. You can pick up very subtle changes in somebody. And that, for me, is true, because I can. Especially people I'm close to. I can pick up when they're not right. I can pick up on very minute body language changes, energy changes, the way they speak, the way they move, things that I know when somebody's not right, which can be a blessing in respects of being in a caring role as a nurse, that I can sense when somebody's not right. As a friend or family member, I can sense when they're not right, and I can pick up on that, however minute, and try and help and try and relieve, you know, sort of help them alleviate those feelings. But sometimes I also think, is that because of me? Are they being like that because of me? Because that's kind of how it was growing up with my dad when he wasn't well. Is that because of me? Is he angry because of me? Is my friend unpacking her handbag quite forcefully because she's angry, because I've said something or done something or looked at her a certain way? 99.9% of the time, no, it's nothing to do with me at all. Or it's just that she's just tired or stressed, or and that's why we were such a good team in my old team, because we were all a bit like that. We could all sense the energy changes in each other, and we knew when one of us wasn't good. And as a collective, as a work family, we would use our own kind of all our empathy to help that person. Whereas now in my new role, I don't feel, you know, I've been quite open and honest, particularly my female colleague, because she's very much like me in some ways. She's quite open and honest about her feelings, that I feel able to sort of share with her a lot of stuff. Whereas my male colleague, because he is super chilled, and you know, he's a, you know, I don't mean this disrespectfully at all, but he's a man of my father's age, so he's probably a little less open with his emotions and thoughts and feelings, as a generational thing, as a cultural thing, as a being a, you know, sort of slightly older gentleman. But I feel safe with them. I feel safe with my colleagues. I feel supported with my colleagues. I feel very much looked after. But it's different. It's a different shift, a different shift in energy, but not a bad one. It's just different. So that's just something I'm just going to have to learn to develop and learn to live with. And hopefully over time, I will probably form closer working relationships with both of them. It's still early days. You know, I only started, you know, end of October, beginning of November, and we're only in the end of January now. We're not even in the end of January yet. It's another like week to go. But, you know, so I'm not even 6 months into this new post yet. And I know I've made the right decision. I know I have. But it's just one of those things, isn't it? It's just adjusting. An adjustment takes a little bit longer. You know, if I've been somewhere for 6 years, it's going to take me a hell of a long time to adjust somewhere else, isn't it? So it's just about being patient, which, you know, I struggle with patience. but it's swings and roundabouts, and it's all learning at the end of the day. And it's all that kind of self-discovery and seeing what I can be truly capable of in this new role. And, you know, and I did it on my own merit, so I'm capable of doing the job. And, you know, aside from not even it wasn't even a criticism from my consultant. It was just probably an observation, which was pretty obvious, to be honest, that I overlooked. So it wasn't any kind of telling off at all. It's just, I'm just very, very self-aware, I guess. Probably more than I need to be. So that's kind of where things are at the moment. So I'm getting there. I'm, you know, taking it day by day, and hopefully I'll stop having crazy dreams about shoes and socks and being late for work and things, and hopefully things will start settling down. And I've got some more time off coming up soon. So, you know, I'm just trying not to worry about being on my own, because I'm not really on my own. There's somebody at the end of the phone. There's, you know, I've got colleagues in sort of other roles similar to mine that I can sort of, tap into, that, you know, can give me some support and advice. I've got, you know, a hospital full of people at the end of the day, you know, and if I don't know, then I don't know, do I? So, but I can try and find out, and that's all I can do, isn't it? So I just need to apply that kind of logic a bit more, without saying, oh, I need to get this done right now. I need to, oh, everything's going to go, you know, belly up if I don't do it right, and this is going to go wrong. It's not. It really isn't. So, you know, can only do what I can do. So on that note, I'm going to bid you farewell, and I will hopefully not leave it so long next time before I post any more content. So again, you know, it has been a little bit of a repetitive kind of exercise, but I also use this as a means of being quite cathartic and getting my thoughts out to the universe, so I can take the pressure off myself a little bit as well. So it's almost like, you know, if anything, it's like kind of a journalizing it, I guess, if that's a word. But yeah, as always, keep talking. Let's break down these, you know, barriers and stigmas around mental health, and let's be kind of free to be able to express our thoughts and feelings safely with those that care about us as we care for them. And always keep talking and reaching out and supporting people that, you know, if you've got friends that are a little bit quieter, a little bit not quite right, just, you know, check up on them. And I shall speak to you guys soon. So as always, stay safe, don't get blown away in Storm Jocelyn. And all the best, and I'll speak to you soon. Good night.